The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Do you find injustices in the policies of corporations and governments, yet feel powerless to do anything about them? Join us today for Real Conspiracies with Scientific and Spiritual Solutions with Dr. Robert Newton. Our program will be empowering, not only uncovering conspiracies, but actually offering solutions to these plots. There will be no holy cows, and no subject is off the table. Now, here is Dr. Robert Newton.
Amen. Good afternoon. This is Dr. Newton with Sarah Gazala, and in this corner, weighing 350 pounds, with the stench of a shape-shifting reptilian, with the name and wearing the black trunk in the black corner. And in the other corner, Orion Moya wearing the white trunks with a slingshot in his rototiller. Let's get ready to rumble! All right. Well, I'm very, very excited to have Orion again on the air. We had him a little bit for the discussion on the computer occurrences, and you might want to know a couple of your thoughts in on that. But Orion and I have been speaking about this Sumerian culture and the implications that they've had all throughout society. And Orion has the best overview and the best understanding of this of anyone I've ever met. Every time I talk to him, I learn something. And for a know-it-all like myself, that's quite a feat. Anyway, without further ado, I'm going to let Orion just kind of, he has pretty much knows where he wants to go with everything. So, and Sarah, of course, bring in your questions too. So go ahead and let's get going on this.
All right. Well, I think before the first thing we could do is we could first mention, you know, the Sumerian civilization and talk about them before we get into the subject of the Anunnaki, because it's really important to understand the Sumerians before we understand their gods and goddesses. So, I mean, I'm sure the Sumerian-speaking people settled in the land they called Sumer, in a region of the Fertile Crescent, and that lays along the southern portions of the valley of the Euphrates and Tigris rivers. The area is located just before those great tributaries dumped their waters into the Persian Gulf, and that's an area which is now known as southern, eastern, southeastern Iraq. The Greeks later called that area Mesopotamia, meaning between the rivers. To the northeast of that is modern-day Iran and the Zagros Mountains, and the southwest of that was the Arabian Desert. And what occurred there some 6,000 years ago has been called the most crucial event in human history. Literally seeming out of nowhere, a highly advanced, thriving culture appeared sometime after 4,000 BC. What's clear is that they developed a highly sophisticated system of irrigation and agriculture, which took full advantage of those two rivers. And they quickly established magnificent cities, advanced governing laws in a written language, which was called enigmatically Sumerian. It's actually pronounced Sumerian, but the pronunciation of it turned into Sumerian because.
So, can I ask you a question? Is there any ruins or any evidences of this culture?
Well, there certainly is. There's evidence if you go throughout the Middle East, we'll find, you know, gigantic quarried stones and ziggurats and ruins of these ancient Mesopotamian temples, which were, you know, erected most of the time astronomically, you know, aligned with constellations and for the viewing of certain movements of planetary bodies.
Like with the Egyptians and the Mayas, right? And the Aztecs.
You're right. Those are the more notable ones. But there's ones that came way before then. And mind you, the Egyptian pyramids were around long before the Egyptian pharaohs, they had them depicted on Sumerian clay seals while they were developing them. They called it the Ikur, the artificial mountain.
Wow. Well, yeah, Edgar Cayce also was talking about at least a 10,000-year age in some of his readings. So, and I've always thought that's maybe even deeper than that. And what about also those pyramids that they found down in the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, which could very well be remnants of Atlantis, which is kind of tied in with what we're talking about too, right?
It certainly is tied in because, mind you, kingship was lowered from heaven to the Sumerians after the flood, is what they said. So there was a great flood that happened, and Sitchin, who I, you know, have read all of his work, and that's who I'm basing a lot of this knowledge from, because he was one of the most amazing linguists who deciphered this language and related it to all the Hebrews texts and the other languages. So he didn't make any mention himself of Atlantis, because what he was doing was just reading straight off what the Sumerians left, and they didn't mention anything about Atlantis, which is, I find, unique. Maybe they were just separated altogether from whatever the pre-diluvial cities were, or maybe those civilizations weren't in control of, you know, humans yet. Mind you, there was settlements on Earth with humans long before Sumer, but mankind had never been given a civilization and put in control of things like agriculture and producing food and all these things on its own up until 6,000 years ago.
Yeah, well, I remember Plato and Sophocles talked about the floods and possibly even Socrates. So this flood is, you know, it's well documented.
Yeah, and just evidence. You could see scientific evidence that of this flood, definitely. And as well as all the other Sumerian texts, they're all corroborated by modern science.
They were positing some pictures I saw on Facebook where they could show watermark on some of the pyramids in Egypt. So that would be a good indication too. And it would be an indication that those pyramids definitely predated this 5,000 year time, pathetic timeline that's actually been given to them. So.
Right. I think one of the best giveaways for the fact that the earth was flooded was the agriculture started up in the highlands, up on top of mountains, and no one can explain this, why agriculture and cultivation of crops started on the tops of mountains. And the only thing that would have made sense is that the story that they gave us is that it was literally flooded and they had to reintroduce agriculture at the tips of these mountaintops.
Yeah, well, being an organic farmer, I will tell you, farming at the top of mountains is not optimum in any way, shape, or form, because
right,
it's too cold and there's not enough heat and prana and soil bacteria or anything to really make things work. So,
of course, and before the Anunnaki were growing mass amounts of food in what they call the Eden, you know, the Garden of Eden. That was where these rivers, it was very fertile land, but it was absolutely flooded out. And so the Anunnaki needed our help to rebuild everything and preserve this culture.
Okay, so that was at the Garden of Eden was basically in the Tigris-Euphrates area, right?
Right, right. It was an actual place called the Eden.
So now, how does all of that fit in with the biblical stuff? Because I tell you, when you explain it, the seemingly disjointed Bible makes a lot more, Old Testament makes a lot more sense than it does without your narrative.
Oh, well, I mean, one of the most obvious parts in the Bible is when, and God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness. You know, we're using plural terms here. They're mentioning multiple gods. And remind you, they made a distinction between the Lord God and just God. You know, there's many different types of gods that they're mentioning, even in the Bible.
Are you referring to like Elohim, Yahweh, Jehovah, like that?
Well, yeah, Elohim was a plural term for gods. It just meant plural gods. So just like in the Sumerian tablets, where that's where the Genesis story is based off of, the original epic of creation, though, it becomes totally obscured. You can't really find out what it's talking about in the opening verses of Genesis unless you apply the Sumerian originals. And you can see that it's talking about these two waters being mingled, right? But what does that even mean? Well, it had to do with our whole solar system went through a great, and you could say that it was invaded by an invader planet that was called Nibiru. And science knows this by Bode's law states that there's a missing planet between Mars and Jupiter, I believe, and they still can't account for all this missing mass in our solar system.
Parts of the planets that are smaller than they were originally, right?
Right, and Uranus is knocked on its side, and Earth's moon is way too big for in relative to the planet size as it is now. And so if you go to the original epic of creation, the Enuma Elish, the Sumerian version of how the world began includes to some degree the formation of other members of the solar system. And it's telling you how there was a planet that was captured by our solar system. And science now came up with this term rogue planet. They discovered these rogue planets that are just flying out in space. Because certain stars can collapse, they're called pulsars, and they'll thrust their planets out into space, you know, possibly to be captured by the gravitational pull of another solar system.
Wow.
And this is precisely what the Sumerian epic of creation was recording, this event that happened approximately 4 billion years ago, that was the very event that brought the double helix structure to Earth in the first place. It was more or less cross-pollinated through a planetary collision. And that was the very collision of Tiamat, which our Earth was called Tiamat. It was much larger than it is now. And the other half of Earth it was collided with became the asteroid belt going in retrograde.
Okay, so when I ask you about that double helix, you mean that there's like a double helix energy field that circulates?
No, the DNA itself.
DNA, yeah, okay.
Right. So DNA science can tell us how life on Earth evolved, but they can't tell us how life on Earth began. There's no the double helix is too advanced already to have just evolved in the time span that we know Earth to be. So it must have been brought from elsewhere where it could have evolved much longer, and that seems to be the case when you follow all the science and you follow the fact that there's a gaping hole. If you were to take all the water off of Earth, first off, you'll notice that all the land masses are concentrated on one side of the planet, which is odd. If you and then the other side is just mainly an ocean with a gaping hole in it. And the Sumerians came to know the Earth as Ki. They called it Ki, like Enki was one of their, you know, one of the main gods, the first Anunnaki sent here to treat gold in the Persian Gulf, because their whole mission here was a gold mining, advanced gold mining, you know, operation, because they believed that their atmosphere was dwindling and they needed to restart their atmosphere or they would go extinct. And Enki's name literally means Lord of Earth. And so the word Ki, the root word turned into the word G that we use for geology and geography, but it was originally pronounced Ki. And the Sumerian root word Ki means to cut off or to sever. So anytime we use words like geology or geography, we're invoking the Sumerian cosmology of the Earth that it was once cut or severed. And that's exactly what, you know, if we hear of Pangaea, this time where all the continents were one and then somehow they all kind of became in where the continents are today, that doesn't make any sense if Earth was formed as a perfect sphere, you know, with no issues.
Yeah, well, let me ask you a couple things now. You think that Nibiru could have had some of its atmosphere scoured off, like possibly it did, and possibly what it possibly did to Mars? Because there's a lot of temples on Mars that Richard Hoagland's put together, the stones back together in computerized form, and shown that there was definitely structures there, whereas NASA just says it's an amorphous mass of rubble.
Yeah, Richard Hoagland is definitely exposing a lot of that NASA, you know, the dark mission that is NASA, never a straight
answer.
That's
his other book. The first book was Monuments of Mars, which has pictures of 3, 4, and 5-sided pyramids on a much grander scale in New Cydonia than what exists in Giza or any other place aggregated all over Egypt.
Yeah, there's definitely the chance that there is other planets in our solar system that had settlements on them by these same Anunnaki who were, you know, interstellar. They had capabilities to travel deep space. And even in the Vedas, they talk about, you know, gold-plated Vimanas and flying crafts. And
yeah, they did. That'll be another show where we'll talk about that.
Right. But I just wanted to mention something about the Sumerian language itself. Lawrence Gardner points out in Genesis of the Grail Kings, it appeared in a complete and composite form, as if from another world. In the style known as cuneiform, there are now tens of thousands of clay tablets and cylinder seals containing Sumerian texts describing everything from taxation and administrative records to essays and literature. It's a very unique phenomenon. So, I mean, the fact that we have this enigmatic language that just appeared, and it was the original language from which all other Semitic languages developed and all other mythologies were based off of, it's very important when we're trying to understand how civilizations developed and spread out. We have to relate them all to those original words that we're using, because now all the languages have changed so much that, you remember the Tower of Babel incident. There was even an incident where God purposely tried to confuse mankind's tongues.
I thought the Tower of Babel was in Washington, D.C.
It might as well be.
It's the Neo Tower of Babel.
But the most intriguing aspect of the Sumerians is their arrival on the scene with all of the attributes of civilization already formulated in what they termed the Mi. And that was kind of like this little tablet, you could say, almost like maybe what we call an iPad. But these attributes included everything from kingship and priesthood to the arts of lovemaking, kindness, songs, the crafts of scribes, builders, leather makers, wood and copper workers, giving of judgment, even making of beer was described in these means, which were given periodically to civilization to advance our knowledge.
Okay, well, Sarah wanted to ask a question.
I was curious. This sounds very similar to one of the earlier civilizations or the Jewish civilization, shall we say. I'm not sure if I'm saying it correctly.
Different.
Yeah. You see a lot of similarity from what you're saying right there. So.
Are the descendants. The Hebrews are the descendants of the Sumerian people. The biblical patriarchs are the, like Abraham in the Bible, where it starts off. It doesn't really mention what happened before, you know, all of a sudden Abraham is being led into, you know, out of Sumer. But the Bible basically starts off at the end, at the fall of Sumer. And so the biblical patriarchs are the Sumerian kings.
Thank you. And plus, I was curious, too, wasn't the Anunnaki here for the purpose of digging up gold and created some sort of a slave system by breeding with those of the beings that were already on the earth, the original inhabitants of the earth? They were breeding with them?
Yes,
and use them as slaves?
Well, that goes back to a few genetic experiments that were led by Enki and his wife, or his half-sister. Her name was Ninharsag. And they took it upon themselves to make a primitive worker to help them mine for this gold in Africa somewhere around, Sitchin postulates, 300,000 years ago, was when this first genetic intervention occurred between primitive ape man and then all of a sudden Cro-Magnon man appears on the scene, you know, capable of receiving orders and instructions. And then there was another genetic upgrade that gave us XY chromosomes so that we could now reproduce. Because no, hybrids, you know, hybrids cannot produce offspring. And if essentially that's what we are, because the evolution of the past has followed evolution happens. I'm not denouncing evolution, but in human's case, evolution makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree with that.
and that's where we have to realize that there's this kind of schism between evolutionists and creationists that are, you know, arguing, oh, it's either evolution or creation, it's either science or religion, when really it's a mixture of the two, and neither of those single, you know, belief systems. Evolution and creationism cannot stand on its own. They both require each other.
Yeah, well, Darwin's thing was a theory, and it was actually had a lot of PR to bring it into acceptance, because it was not taken to originally. And in England, they did a big push on it to do this. And the other thing I wanted to bring up is Robert Temple's book, The Serious Mystery, talks about those gold mines in there, down there in South Africa area, down into there. And they go so deep and so far, they're not in any existing records. So that would give an indication that, you know, they predated, you know, modern civilization.
Absolutely. They found records of settlements in Africa, you know, up to 200,000 years old. Like,
and there was
cities.
There was some guy I was watching on YouTube that was actually down there. I don't know if it was like South Africa. No, I think it was a place next to it. That used to be called Rhodesia. It's called anyway, there's all these temples that they found down there. I mean, these megaliths that you were talking about, they're huge. And he's saying, like, the government really isn't happy about them being down there, because they don't even, you know, they don't want people knowing about kind of stuff. It's like, so, you know, it's the same old. It's the same old thing, probably Illuminati pressure to put on the government, say, hey, don't bring this thing out anymore. Did we, Sarah, talk about that Romanian pyramid that they found? And then the United States government put pressure on Romania to only release it in little bits of information, because it had like a thought chamber, a thought enhancing chamber in there, probably similar to the sarcophagus I experienced in the Great Pyramid, where I had all those far out things happen to me. So,
I don't recall the mention of this, but I have heard some similar information about it. You know, I'm curious, what exactly is the deal with the gold? You know, I know
that's a good question.
Gold is the highest vibration in our universe.
Octahedric in form, so it's a very auspicious position in the table of elements, right, Orion?
Yes, but right. there is something that has a greater vibration, and that is spirit.
Oh, absolutely. Gold, I believe, was used for its properties to reflect infrared light and to create what's called, you know, now we call it monoatomic gold, but what they called it in Egyptian and earlier times was shemana or muskut. And this is fascinating and pointed out by Lawrence Gardner. There was even a whole Egyptian temple found in the desert that was dedicated to the god Hathor, and it was purely made for the creation of this powdery substance derived from gold called muskut. And we find that that's exactly what was carried through the metallurgy sciences of alchemy, is what they were trying to purify to achieve the philosopher's stone and to expand their lifespan. And this is even mentioned in the Bible, where Moses comes back after receiving the Ten Commandments, and he comes back to see the Hebrews worshiping the golden calf. And now, mind you, the Hebrew people had witnessed many people go up to these gods, like Enoch, or previously known as Enmeduranki, and they just never returned. They reportedly left planet, and so they thought that Moses had just left them there. So what they did was they just created this idol to the next closest god that could help them out, and that was Ninhursag, and her symbol was the calf. So they made this golden calf, and what Moses did was he kind of wrongly got mad at them and broke the original tablets, and what he did, notably, is took all their gold, smelted it down into a pot, refined it into a powder, and fed it back to the Israelites.
Whoa. So did this man write a book?
Is what?
Was the the person that talked about it was Wallace?
Oh, Lawrence Gardner. But did he write
a book?
Yes, he did. It's called one of them, which specifically focuses on this monatomic gold usage throughout ancient history, is Genesis of the Grail Kings.
Okay, and I want people to be able to check that. Like, I'll check that out myself.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, we're finding out today that the properties of this powder that can be derived from gold or sea salt, you can extract monatomic elements from salt as well, and that's why salt was also important to the alchemists. But it can do everything from correct our DNA to exhibit anti-gravitational properties. It can, Lawrence Gardner speculates that it might have been what was in the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark was basically a carrying box for these monoatomic powders that they were known to have been created. That's no, speculation. They already found the temples where they even were shoveling out pounds of this powder, not knowing what it was when they first discovered it.
Okay, so
I think
we're close to break. I don't see a prompt here, but usually we break around this time. But go ahead. I guess Kevin can break us when he wants to.
Yeah, he's saying, yeah, break. Okay,
let's go to break. And boy, I tell you, you haven't heard anything yet. We've got a whole bunch more stuff lined up for you. So we'll go on a break, and we'll take some DMT on the break and see what kind of breakthroughs we get. All right.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
Through Dr. Newton's books and classes described at drrobertnewton.com, the following things can occur in your life: increased prosperity and abundance, a state of happiness, humor and tranquility, which makes life a joy to live, increased energy fields downloaded into the body, increasing your overall vigor, increased creativity, putting no task beyond your ability to complete it, increased intelligence, knowledge, and wisdom, the awakening and or increasing of psychic abilities, increased sexual intensity, pleasure, energy, and bliss, the opening of the heart chakra, allowing you to give and receive love in great quantities, as well as conceiving and manifesting your goals and desires in an accelerated and certain fashion. These things and more can be augmented by using the Scientific Miracle Health product, ASEA. ASEA is a stabilized redux product that completely rejuvenates the body and brain and transports the brain-mind to theta trance and divine consciousness, as do the techniques revealed in Dr. Newton's classes, wherein miracles routinely occur. For more information, visit drrobertnewton.com.
News. Opinion. Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Real Conspiracies with Scientific and Spiritual Solutions with Dr. Robert Newton. Contact the program today at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to theta4ia@yahoo.com. Now, back to Real Conspiracies with Scientific and Spiritual Solutions.
Sorry about that. The feed's a little low, so I jumped the gun. I've done that once before, but I won't say what I said the other time in response to that. So it sounds like Sarah's daughter wants to get in on the show, and she's definitely more intelligent than those doom cops that are over there in Washington, D.C., dreaming up all their laws. Just share with people, Sarah, what we were talking about on the break about the survival of the fittest mentality.
Oh, I was saying that Darwin's theory, I don't believe it. It holds. It can hold up to anything, because if you remove the system, everyone has the possibility of survival. There's the system is what's controlling everybody. The system is basically what's dictating what, you know, how much you're going to have of this, and, you know, if you're going to get any money today, if you're not going to get fed today. It's you know, basically the system that controls the survival situation. If you remove the system, everyone has a possibility of surviving at this point. And that's in my eye. You know, I'm feeling that, you know, we would be coming back from the heart again and be working at that heart level instead of working at the greed and control and the dog eat dog situation that we're in right now.
Yeah, well, exactly. that's what our whole Thrive show was about. And and the whole concept of Zeitgeist and all of this. And actually I'm thinking, I'm feeling very strongly, I'm trying to remember if that American Free Press article talked about this, but I think they actually set this up to create this acrimonious system of competition to condition people to realize only a few people can come out ahead and come out and win. And I spent maybe like 20 pages in the prologue of A Map to Healing knocking that whole idiotic concept to pieces. So
exactly, it's a program and that they created, and we need to deprogram from it because it is a bunch of lies, a bunch of illusion.
It is. Okay,
well, all it does, it makes us believe that we must compete for our very sense of self.
Yeah,
a lie, straight up a lie. There's no reason to compete.
Look at nature. Look at nature as your template, which my fourth book, Arboriforia, which I'll be finishing soon, and I basically show how everything coexists within harmony in there. So there's your template. There's the foundation of your whole planet right there. And so basically that's all we have to do. The plants, the big trees could take almost all the water and almost all the nutrients. But notice, they only take enough, and they also realize through the fractal geometries in the trees, by the amount of branches they have, that allows a corresponding number of precise number of plants to exist around them. So you see, this is like a perfect system. It's just man gunked it up and dumbass men to wit.
We are definitely very confused on Earth. We're plagued with our language systems that are like a virus from outer space.
Yes, we are.
So continue on, or what you were talking about. Let's definitely get into Thoth, Hermes, and Enoch, who was also part of that.
Okay, well, the most intriguing aspect of the Sumerians is their arrival on the scene. Oh, I'm sorry. Is basically what we have is the fundamental regard of the Sumerians as a group who they called the Anunnaki, literally meaning those who from heaven to earth came. And as in any later pantheon, the Anunnaki consisted of a number of very different personalities. Like you're saying, there's Tahoth, who we hear of, his original name being Ningisida. There is Enki, Enlil. The whole pantheons we hear of every culture, they can all be traced to these Sumerian Anunnaki main gods, who then had sons on earth, and they were second and third generation gods, who were always competing with each other for a rank. So Anu, the head of their you know, group of beings, was ranked 70, and then they went down in ranks of 10, and there was a whole war, pyramid wars, and humans were involved within these clashes because they were fighting for each other for succession of the throne based on their wild succession codes of genetic, you know, if you were to have an heir to a half sister, that son would be the heir to the throne because he was considered more pure blood. And this you can see throughout many other cultures who carry that.
Yeah, the Egyptians did the same thing. The pharaoh married his sister.
Right. So they, with their very distinct personalities, it can be used to establish what's called archetypes. But all of the evidence suggests that the Anunnaki were historical figures and not mythological, which I see a lot of kind of New Age stuff starting to believe, is that these gods that were depicted on the Egyptian walls and talked about in every culture, that they were purely mythical archetypal forces within our own consciousness. And there's just way too much evidence to suggest that these beings were actually showing up on the battlefield with technology and bearing weapons that you know, often had been the cause of one group winning the battle over another, was because they were given some weapon of brilliance by their most beloved god. And so the first three great regions that were set up by these Anunnaki was Sumer. It was pronounced Sumer, not Sumer. There was Egypt, and then there was the Indus Valley civilization. And you'll see that there is many.
That being the Indians, right? The Asian Indians, right?
Right, like the Hindus who came.
Right.
They were transmitted all this Sumerian knowledge, like their astrological knowledge of these numbers that are replete throughout the Vedas. And the same numbers pop up in all these different mythologies, like the number 432,000, which is an exact number based off 360 and 10. The Sumerians used a sexagesimal mathematics system that was able to track celestial time and what they called divine time, and then they basically lowered all these scales of advanced numbers to give earthly time based on the sun and the moon.
Four 432 is a diatonic note in the diatonic scale.
I think
it's A.
It seems as though they had advanced knowledge, or, you know, the Anunnaki who were lowering this knowledge from the heavens is what the Sumerians believe, that anything that was great in Sumer, anything that was beautiful or that was that they knew was a gift from the gods, was a gift from the Anunnaki. So there's no other way to explain how they possessed this vast, accurate, you know, astronomical knowledge, unless someone that had known and been to these outside planets. I mean, mind you, Zechariah Sitchin in his books, like the 12th planet, he had translated all the qualities of the outer planets, like Neptune and Pluto and Uranus, before we had ever sent satellites out to discover what they were like. And he was just translating the Sumerian tablets.
Wow. So.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Robert.
Go ahead. I'll wait.
I was curious about something. I know for this may upset a few people, but Iraq, you know, it's a very historical country as far as all that's happened there, and
it is modern day Sumer.
The museums are, you know, I believe at one point were filled with all kinds of historical information, and the only reason that we, or the U.S., went to war with Iraq was to remove this information so no one else could really find out what was going on as far as the real history behind Sumeria and ourselves too. I mean, how else are we going to learn but from our history?
Right. How else are we going to not repeat the same mistakes that were repeated for thousands of years? I mean, we have this thriving civilization, Sumer, that lasted for 2,000 years, and it's sad because the events of the 21st century BC are seemingly about to repeat in the 21st century AD. And that was a nuclear fallout. You know, that Sumer fell to an unexpected, you know, the Anunnaki were messing with nuclear weaponry. They obviously came here with it because their story goes, when they mentioned why they had to come here for gold, before they came here to find gold, they tried to jumpstart their atmospherical process by sending nuclear weapons into their own volcanoes. And that didn't work. So the next thing they tried was treating water at these advanced water treatment facilities in the Persian Gulf, and that didn't work either. So then they had to resort to backbreaking toil, which eventually this group of Anunnaki, led by Enki, 200 of them or so, they mutinied. And they said, we're not going to do this. This is too hard. We need to come up with a solution. And so they all came to a council, just like the Greeks talk about their gods coming to this council. And Anu, who was the head of that, took Enki's suggestion to make this primitive worker. And you can see that that's when instantly we were given this upgrade, and there's another genetic upgrade after that, and that's who the line that we're from. We're not related to Neanderthal man or what we call pre-human is actually pre-hominid. It's not what we are. We are even different upgrade from that. You can see that our XY chromosomes have been fused together in some fantastic way.
Well, Our DNA is a very complex computer code, as Dr. Yakti points out in Evolution, Information Theory, and the Origins of Man. If you want to read a really fascinating book, read that. And Bill Gates said the same thing, that our DNA was more complex than any computer code that Microsoft had ever contemplated writing. So,
I mean,
this is like a very, very high evolved, you know, code.
It's a language, and through learn. Once we crack the, you know, we're getting to the point to understand how to read this genetic code. It's literally like this library holding vast amounts of information inside of us. We're only recently beginning to learn the language that it uses. And it's very significant to other, like the I Ching and the 64 hexagrams and the number 64 popping up throughout all religions and all mythic kind of systems.
Talk about that a little more.
Well, 64 is the number of codons, I believe, in your DNA.
I think you're right.
It goes by sacred geometrical principles. And so the Hebrews, naturally, in their Bible, they contain lots of sacred geometry and information that was all remnants of all the knowledge and wisdom that was collected during the Sumerian civilization.
This is in the Torah?
Yes, in the Kabbalah.
The Kabbalah is the geometric. Yeah,
Kabbalah literally translates to it means that which is received. It was received from somebody. And what you see is that there are these two factions of these Anunnaki gods, whom the Greeks tolerantly began to call gods. They had many names in the Egypt's pantheon. They were called Netir, or the Sumerians also mentioned them as Dingir, which translates to righteous ones of the rocket ships. Anunnaki is another term in the Bible. They use the term Nephilim, which roughly translates to giants, but could also be construed to mean those who came down, just like the Anunnaki means those who came down from heaven to earth. And two of these clans were at war with each other, the Enkiites and the Enlilites. And it was Enki, ironically, who is portrayed in the Bible as Lucifer. He's the serpent. And so Ningishida, we were talking about Tahoth and Quetzalcoatl. They're often, this god is represented by a serpent, usually.
Yeah, always.
Because he was a part of this serpent clan that Enki was the benefactor of, and it was specifically used to disseminate spiritual knowledge to mankind, because Enki loved us. We were his creation, his idea, basically, and that made him different than the other Anunnaki, who would have just liked us to do our work and kind of be mindless slaves. And then what you see is Marduk was left in control of Egypt, and what he did was he became power hungry. And the reason he started going crazy is, well, first off, I mean, trying to put yourself in one of these guys' shoes, they live much longer lifespans than we do. I mean, even the Bible says a thousand days are but a day in the eyes of God, right?
Yeah, we were talking about 900 and more year lifespans, and those are more descended, like Moses and Aaron and Methuselah, right? They were like, they weren't
That's
even
right. they had,
at
they
the
had,
upper level.
They had longer. They weren't even near the 100,000 to, you know, who knows, 200,000 years that these Anunnaki actually lived, and that's why they were believed to be immortal. And so when there was a demigod, or what Sitchin calls a semigod, they would, like Gilgamesh, for instance, they would be considered two-thirds divine, and so they would be seeking immortality, because they claimed, if I am two-thirds divine, why can I not partake in this immortality of the gods? And it was always, you know, brought up throughout history.
Make me feel like such a lunatic right now on pushing my concept that we can actually immortalize our bodies. So
no, we totally can. The thing
right.
is that where our DNA has been basically dumbed down. I wish we really need to clear and wake it up and proceed, because we're not using all of it.
Let's
do a show on that.
The yogic system.
Put that together. Yeah.
I mean, yoga in the East, that seems to be a system developed to help breed out this Anunnaki genetics that were bred into us, forced into us. And so in order to not have this hierarchical complex, there was many spiritual systems that were learned throughout antiquity, and especially in the East, because they were isolated from all the wars that were going on in the West. And the Hindus were seated by Inanna. She was one of the granddaughters of Anu. And she was allotted her own region finally, after pleading to the gods that she be given her own region. So they let her set up the third great region, which is the Indus Valley, where the Hurrians and the Hittites and then the Hindus emerged. And there's a text that speaks about her getting Enki drunk one night and actually persuading him to give her a bunch of these Mies, these little technological tablets that could teach, you know, like I was saying, all these things. And so she gifted these Mies to those Hindus and then impromptu abandoned them. She lost interest in the East. And she was more trying to have this, wage this power battle, this ego trip with her brother Marduk in Egypt. So those spiritual systems are more intact in the East for a reason. You know, all our libraries in the West were burnt to the ground.
Well, that's why I've been trying. I know you're ready to learn the Kriya Kundalini Pranayam, Orion, and when you learn it, you'll be leaving my ass in the dust. I know that, but I don't really care. I want to see some people fly. It's a system that just, I can't even tell you what it does. It calms you down. It opens your heart. It gives you great sentience. It allows you to go into the Akashic records and receive information from non-earthly sources at will. It allows you to remote view. All of this stuff becomes, you know, part of your arsenal,
right,
or your abilities. So,
and I just want to make one mention of the whole justice systems had completely shifted after the fall of Sumer, and Marduk, he was utilizing the astronomical significance of the age processing into the age of Ram to declare his supremacy on Earth as the chief deity, and he basically invented a slave religion that would keep people as his slaves in Egypt. And so then that's where this mysterious character Yahweh appears on the scene. And he claims that he's going to smite the god of Egypt, you know, off the face of the earth for basically changing all the Sumerian ways and the wisdom, which was so prevalent at an early stage in Sumer. Like, for instance, the Sumerian wisdom, they found many phrases in Sumerian, like, in a city that has no watchdogs, the fox is the overseer. That is an example of some proverbs that were found on clay tablets. Even one, for a man's pleasure, there is marriage. On thinking it over, there is divorce. So clearly we're talking about some supremely wise beings here.
So basically we have the DNA of gods, but the heart of Gaia. Because we are originally in the inhabitants,
right.
Yes.
We're only half indigenous to this earth.
Yes. So if we were to wake up all that, that's, you know, right there, something amazing to just ponder about.
Exactly. I think the best thing that we could do is stop taking up arms against each other in claim of my god versus your god game. We're still playing that whole, you know, pitted gods against gods, and the gods aren't even here any longer.
I agree with you. That makes absolute total sense. Yeah, I don't understand a system, basically, any religious, monetary, educational. It's all for the brainwashing slavery purpose, and we need to get rid of all that and just go back to finding ourselves again, go back to our natural state again, and being who we are, not what they want us to be. Yes, they established all these systems to keep us in this dumbed down form, fighting each other, and completely brainwashed as far as what's really going on out there. They did a great
job.
But
it wasn't they. They also did the opposite. Remember, Enki had a different plan for humans, and that's why he was called Lucifer. Lucifer so that no other factions could start following him. And he just to basically throw all this propaganda on this serpent symbology, mind you, in every other culture before the Judeo-Christian beliefs, serpents and dragons had to do with wisdom and knowledge.
That's true.
And that is true, yes.
Everywhere.
Okay, so. And then they twisted it and made it something right. else. And plus, there is something else going on behind the scenes. I think this may be another show altogether. But a lot of inbreeding in the wrong way. And because originally I've had the opportunity to meet on another level the actual serpent being, and she's a female, and she is benevolent. And from what I'm understanding,
my experiences with ayahuasca, I feel I've met that same serpent being. That's definitely a close connection. I feel with the serpent and this vine that's traditionally used to have these visionary experiences and give you this wisdom of the natural world. Mm-hmm. What they call ayahuasca, the serpent vine. It is, you know, I had an ayahuasca experience, and literally after I came back, a huge snake manifested physically right in front of me and was mm-hmm. basically communicating telepathically mm-hmm. with me.
Yes, yes. And this huge snake, yes, is the benevolent being. And from what I understand, after some time, something went wrong along the lines, and the, you know, this whole survival of the fittest, basically, you see us fighting and pinning each other and going at each other. Something went wrong, and I can't really say exactly what it is, but
you know. Everything went wrong. What do you? It all went bad. I mean, NT wrote his own autobiography describing how horrible he felt to what happened here, and they distinguish between destiny and fate. What the Sumerians called destiny, they called Nam. And what they called fate was Namtar, because that meant to cut destiny. So mm-hmm. destiny was something to do with the determined orbital paths of planetary bodies, because we don't control that. That is destined. For instance, the collision that took place between Nibiru and Tiamat 4 billion years ago that brought the genetic seed of life to Earth, that was Nam. That was destiny. Mm-hmm. What happened with the nuclear calamity that ended Sumer was Namtar. That didn't have to happen. That happened because they didn't, you know, they were warring with each other for control over these vital space facilities. And when Marduk began claiming supremacy, that's when Enlil got fed up and said, you know what, we're going to take this guy out while he's getting
exactly.
a huge fall.
Exactly, yep.
And that back, mm-hmm. But what happened is it didn't take him out. It backfired in Enlil's plan. And what happened was the nuclear fallout when blew east and made Sumer uninhabitable while Babylon continued.
Really?
Yeah.
See, that I didn't get that story. That's interesting to know.
Exactly. So,
will you emphasize the part about Lucifer again being turned into this dark entity and the process
right, well,
of
okay,
how that happened?
Okay. Enki, the personages and stories of Enki.
30 seconds.
They morphed into the entity now known as Lucifer, and his original name meant the Prince of Earth, which ironically he's now known as the Prince of Darkness, and all for trying to give mankind knowledge in the Bible. So there's obviously some ancient propaganda going on there right off the bat in the Bible, but you could figure this all out by just returning to the originals from which all these stories are based. They mentioned.
That's fantastic. We're going to pick up with this. We're going to pick this up again next week. We have to go, and I really enjoyed the whole process today. So tune in again next week. Namaste.
Namaste.
And
thank you
for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for Real Conspiracies with Scientific and Spiritual Solutions. Please join Dr. Robert Newton next Wednesday afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Have a good week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.